Welcome to Liberal Arts Voices. We are here with Gail Gucci, who is a actually fifth-year student who is in an IUG program in labor studies and employment relations with an MA degree in human resources, right?
Yes.
And Gail has just returned recently from Sweden, where she did an excellent internship program at Volvo. And so we're here to talk to Gail a little bit about her experience. She is the first recipient of the Chapel Executive Internship Program Award, which gives her $5,000 to support to do an internship experience. And we are very happy to have her as our first recipient, especially since you did such an excellent international internship. So I'm really interested in hearing a little bit about what it was like to go there. Were you nervous when you got there?
Very nervous. Yeah, I wrote this about a bit about this in my essay that you might have read, but I got on the plane to go to Sweden without a clue what I was getting myself into. And, you know, I knew that I had a place to live, I knew a taxi would take me there, and I knew I'd start work on Monday.
Well, that's good. I mean, you got a job, yeah. You got a place to live, and you got a way to get there.
Yeah, and beyond that, I just had to be confident that I could figure it out.
So had you been abroad before, before you went to Sweden?
I'd never lived abroad.
Okay.
I did a trip with the Shire Honors College to Vietnam and Cambodia, so that was more of a study tour where we spent the spring learning about the countries and then took 2 weeks in the summer to visit, a week in each. So I knew what it was like to be out of my element, but I didn't know what it was like to be out of my element with no Americans around me, with no family around me.
So you'd never been abroad other than that trip with Shire on your own?
Yeah, besides that, just family trips. Yeah, yeah.
So you got there, got to the airport. Did it go smoothly, or did you have to navigate some serious issues?
It went smoothly. It's odd not having a smartphone. You're kind of used to anywhere you need to go, you can look it up, and I didn't have that.
I always did an hour buffer of time.
Uh-huh. I need to go to the grocery store. All right, it might take me 2 hours to find the right bus. First, get a bus pass. Luckily, a lot of people in Sweden know English.
Yeah.
A lot of their television and movies are in English. They're not dubbed, so their accent is really incredible, actually. So that was definitely an advantage.
So you arrived on a Saturday?
I arrived on a Friday and started on Monday.
Okay, so tell me about the internship. What were you doing? Was that Volvo?
Yeah. I had two managers. Uh-huh. Both were in the talent and competence group. So this was exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to work in corporate HR, and I wanted to work on topics like leadership, like diversity, like performance management. And that's the group they put me in. And so one manager was responsible for talent and competence for the manufacturing organization. So her job was to identify and groom the top leaders of that organization. And my other manager was in charge of diversity and inclusion for the whole company. And he actually had an engineering background.
Really?
And he just had a passion for the subject. So he was, you know, 9 months into the job, so full of energy, really making it his own. And then I sort of got to come in and help create his vision for what he wanted.
So how did you find this internship and this job? I mean, it sounds perfect for you, what you're working on.
One email from Career Services.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I looked in my email last night. I applied to 47 internships fall of last year.
Uh-huh.
I mean, had 8 interviews, and I got one,
You
know? And it happened to be my dream job, but I don't regret any of those 47 applications because that's what it took, you know.
Well, that's an important point, that it takes often a lot of tries, a lot of sending a lot of stuff out there, but also really perseverance for you to and commitment to try and get something.
And I mean, those 7 interviews I didn't get, they were probably the practice I needed to nail the one I really wanted.
So tell me more about sort of daily life in the job at Volvo. You don't have to reveal company secrets.
Sure. I got up at 6 o'clock every day because I took public transportation to work. I'd never been in a place with such incredible public transportation.
Yeah.
I really could get anywhere I needed to go.
Did you live far from the, was it corporate headquarters,
I lived in the city, which is great.
So which city was it?
Gothenburg. Jotunberg.
Jotunberg.
It's a port city, the second largest in Sweden after Stockholm, but still not so large because.
So it was pretty there.
It was beautiful, yeah. a little cold, a little wet, but nothing compared to what I've come back to here.
Right. It's
so
here.
Yeah, it's been insane. My first week back, I did a side to side comparison of the weather reports. It was 40 degrees in Sweden and 5 in my hometown. So everybody thought I was going to freeze to death there, but really,
no,
it was the polar vortex.
Exactly.
So I'd wake up, I'd get on the public transportation. It probably was a 20-minute drive, but took two buses. It took me 55 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
I was taking a world campus class at the time, so I read my textbook on the way to work.
That's
and got there, and I. It was definitely scary the first few days.
Yeah, it did take you a little while to figure out which buses and where they got, mm-hmm. where they stopped and all that.
A lot of buffer time. You know,
yeah.
I was supposed to get there at 8. I probably showed up my first day in public transit at, 7:15,
right.
just because I did not, I really took to heart the idea of the first impression, those first 15 seconds, 15 minutes, first day. I knew I had to be on point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that was really helpful with the scholarship, because a lot of the money wasn't the number one worry. I was able to invest in the kind of business clothes that would make me appropriate for a corporate setting. So when that's not on your mind, you can focus on the right things.
Yeah. Well, you talked in the piece that you wrote about it, mm-hmm. about coming into the lunch hall,
mm-hmm.
At that first day.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
It was probably one of the most exhausting parts of the first day.
Anxiety producing?
Yeah, because you pay at a certain place and then you pick up the silverware and make sure you get a glass and make sure you get a napkin and then you go place them on the table in the right way and then you go into the buffet line. I mean, looking back, it all seemed very similar, but it was actually more similar in the work setting to an American. I've been in American work settings, that seemed more natural to me. Being in a social setting, the,
mm-hmm.
the food atmosphere.
So
I didn't
did somebody help you with navigating that?
Mm-hmm.
Or?
There was a couple great people.
Uh-huh.
It was an international building. I mean, it was definitely Swedish dominated,
mm-hmm.
But there was a Canadian woman who had fallen in love with a Swede in college, and now she was there, and she was a great, dual citizen sort of person who could help me navigate those kind of things. She remembered what it was like. A lot of observation.
That's good.
Just watching, copying.
Right. Well, one of the main values of a liberal arts education is exposing people to global experiences and giving them a perspective,
mm-hmm.
on the global world in which we live. So it sounds like already just in something very simple, like, navigating,
yeah.
how to eat lunch in the corporate,
yeah.
headquarters, you were starting to get that.
Serving sizes, nobody went back for seconds.
No.
It was a buffet.
Oh.
Nobody ever went back for seconds,
so
which is not what happens in my family at a buffet in America.
Right. Right.
It was definitely the first time I left and looked back. And I think some students have negative reactions,
mm-hmm.
to that. Negative feelings come up towards America. I wasn't really, I kind of had passed that point. I was more at a place where I could just see it for what it is, or at least I felt that way.
See American culture for,
mm-hmm.
what it is, So the
without a value judgment,
yeah.
necessarily. I don't need to,
mm-hmm.
say this is good and this is bad. It's just different.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you mentioned when you and I spoke in my office a few weeks ago was about talking to people and the different rhythms that they have,
mm-hmm.
of speaking.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Oh, that they sent me to an expat seminar. So the Volvo headquarters is in Sweden,
mm-hmm.
But their markets are all over the world. So they're always bringing people in to come work in Sweden at this headquarters. And there's quirks to Swedish work life, just like there's quirks to any other. So they put us through the seminar to help us navigate this work. And the woman who was teaching it told us about our speaking styles. So in America, someone says a sentence, it ends. Someone picks up. If you notice it, there's never really a pause. It's just someone's always ready to jump in with their thought as soon as it feels like it's wrapping up. In Sweden, there was always a pause. You let someone finish their thought. There was a few seconds of silence, and then someone would gracefully come in. And so Americans tend to view the silence as kind of awkward. Why isn't anyone talking? And there was another French couple in the room, and they, they also thought this silence was deafening, because in France they're talking over each other. If you finish a sentence, It's the greatest compliment because they get you, they understand you. And then there was a Japanese couple in the room, and they were just, what do you, you know, these silences aren't long enough. I never get a word in. And because in Japan, there somebody would finish a sentence, there might be 30 seconds of silence, something that I would find horribly awkward.
30 seconds.
Yeah, 30 seconds of silence. And that, when I learned that class, in that class that day, I had this epiphany thinking back to all my group projects with international students here at Penn State. And there's a lot of girls in China in my HR program. And I always thought they were so quiet, maybe they didn't, you know, have much to say. I realized I never shut my mouth long enough for them to get a word in, you know, and that was, the amazing part was it was purely a function of our language. It's not some deeply embedded value that we have to argue over. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that we speak makes us not be able to understand each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think just that insight is worth the trip.
Yeah, the whole trip.
Because it's difficult, I know I do it, to just kind of allow the rhythm of a conversation to happen and mm-hmm. to be attentive and to try to be responsive rather than trying to fill in the gaps all the time. And
yeah.
I think we tend not to be comfortable with that kind of silence. Now, 30 seconds between sentences, I don't know if we get anything done.
Yeah.
But
my manager told me a story once of her. She was presenting to a group of Japanese colleagues. She gave her whole presentation, her whole spiel. And she asked, you know, any questions, and nobody said anything. And so she thought, maybe they didn't get it, you know, they're just learning English. So she went through the whole thing again, you know, and then again, does anybody have any questions? And there was nothing. And it's a really hard adjustment. And if you're not even considering there's a cultural component, you're going to only look at it from your American lens, and you're going to assume they don't get you, or worse off, that they're stupid, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And right. Well, and we also bring with us our own certain prejudices we have, or mm-hmm. assumptions we have about people. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to be prejudice in a mm-hmm. really bad sense, but we bring assumptions.
Of course. And I realize I'm not free of bias. I think that's a misconception. Realizing you have bias is the enlightenment you can get to, mm-hmm. because I'm never going to not see through an American lens. It's the reality, you know, I was raised my whole life this way. But if I can recognize that's how I'm seeing it, then maybe I can be better at stepping out to try to see it from somewhere else.
Well, it's that kind of perspective that is just invaluable in experiences like this.
Yeah.
Now, you also worked in the area of HR there that dealt with issues of diversity as
mm-hmm.
well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that. How did that?
Yeah.
What was the nature of that unit in Volvo?
It fell underneath talent and competence. It actually was only one man. My boss was in charge of diversity and inclusion. And he had a network of people who would be in charge for their plant or for their, you know, business unit. But he was the corporate push. And it was the group was called Diversity and Inclusion. So diversity is quantitative. It's the numbers. It's the quotas, you know, affirmative action kind of thing. It's about getting people in the workplace, but to keep them there or to really get the benefit of the diversity of thought, the environment needs to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. It needs to be a place where we're not bringing in diverse candidates and pushing them into our cookie cutter corporate, you know, executive. Mm-hmm. We're allowing them to continue to be themselves, allowing them to express themselves. That's the only way you get the business benefits of diversity.
Right. So, I mean, can contrast that with that original experience in the lunchroom. On the one hand, you have these norms about not going back
mm-hmm.
for seconds and where you put your fork and all of those things. But you also said that the CEO ate there, everybody kind of ate there together. Mm-hmm. So there was this more relaxed culture there as well, right?
In Sweden, they don't emphasize status so much. So as in other internships where the CEO would be like a superstar if he came into the lunchroom, there it was kind of inappropriate to react that way to him. You know, he's just another guy. Mm-hmm. That's the Swedish way. And I think that's a really interesting point, and I don't really know the answer between an inclusive environment where you should be able to be yourself entirely and assimilating to a foreign environment. I think you kind of get a jail-free card by being a foreigner. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that I was able to do that would be inappropriate for a Swede to do there, mm-hmm. but I'm American, so they understood I didn't get it, and uh-huh. they actually knew a lot about us, mm-hmm. a lot, which was kind of embarrassing for me, because I went there, I thought everyone was going to be blonde, I thought I knew so much, and I knew nothing. And then I realized that they learned our 50 states in their school curriculum, and they learned about the American Civil War. You know, they knew all of these things about our country, and I could not return the favor.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's something that's part of the American education system. We're so focused on ourselves, mm-hmm. and on our politics, and on our geography, and it's very difficult to get people to look outside of that and to imagine their way into the perspective of another person.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the value of the kind of experience you had, whether you came prepared with the knowledge about Sweden and about other cultures, or learned it there, you deserve an enormous amount of credit for taking that risk and for really doing that. I mean, not only to go abroad, but to do an internship abroad and do a work experience abroad is a really amazing thing.
Yeah. You have to leave your comfort zone, and you don't know what you're capable of. I could have failed in a way, but at least then I would have known my limits. If I didn't go, I never would have had any idea what I could and couldn't do. And now I'm going to graduate in May, and I'm going to take a full-time job in a job that seems really scary to me and really out of my league. But the reason I'm comfortable with it, the reason I know I can handle it, is because I've been in a place that feels totally ambiguous, totally out of my element, and I survived.
Mm-hmm. So, again, that's one of our liberal arts values, you know, dealing with ambiguity and doing it in a way that allows you to make meaningful experiences, mm-hmm. Dealing with complex situations with nuance. You know,
yeah.
That's an important part. So you're going to work at GE, right? That's
mm-hmm.
where you're working? Oh, they're lucky to have you.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
So what will you be doing there?
I'll be in an HR leadership program.
Okay.
So it's a two-year program. Every 8 months, I'll switch different roles. HR is a really broad field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had internships, but there's a lot more to learn. So they put you through 2 years to try to, you know, build you up as a professional, give you missing pieces, and then after 2 years, I'll have a placement there.
So the integrated undergraduate-graduate program, the IUG that you're in, will allow you to graduate with a BA in labor studies,
mm-hmm.
or is it a BS?
It was a BS, because then it's an MS, actually.
Okay, so it's an MS
mm-hmm.
in human resources.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But yeah, did you take less language because of a BS, or did you have language? What level
mm-hmm.
of language did you learn?
I went to level 3 of Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you were in Sweden, they were all speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Did you learn?
Yeah,
Swedish?
I bought Rosetta Stone. I had prepped all summer,
uh-huh.
and then I got there, and it wasn't. If it had maybe been Spanish, where
mm-hmm.
I had the academic backing to try, it could have been worth it, but. And if I had stayed for more than 4 months, it would have been worth it, because even though everyone spoke Swedish in the lunchroom and at the coffee breaks, people want to default to their natural dialects. And if you want to be on that kind of level with them, it's really a great effort to try to learn Swedish. So if I were to ever work abroad for a year or 2 years, I think it would certainly be worth it to make the effort.
So if you were giving advice to other Penn State students
mm-hmm.
about internships, about study abroad, that sort of thing, what would you say?
There are so many resources available here. And I love my liberal arts education. But I do think it puts, at the end of college, if we leave with nothing but the diploma, there's no job waiting for us. So we do have to, with this wonderful, well-rounded education, we do have to make the effort on our part to pursue other things. I think if you leave Penn State after 4 years with nothing to show but your diploma, you're doing a disservice to yourself, and you haven't found the real value that is here.
Yeah.
I mean, the Career Enrichment Network, for example, I think students think it's just PSU EDU email addresses. You know, those are people in offices ready to talk to you, ready to engage with you. And you just have to engage with all the people around here who want to help you, and they'll point you in the right direction.
Well, I mean, one of the real important strategies and impetuses behind creating the Career Enrichment Network was to give liberal arts students an opportunity to craft a fulfilling life for themselves. So, I mean, that's really what a liberal arts education is all about. Yes, it's about critical thinking. Yes, it's about gaining global perspective, developing ethical imagination to live in different cultures and imagine different people's perspectives. Excellent communication skills, obviously, but ultimately all of that is for living a fulfilling life, finding a career path that is meaningful to you, that's doing something you care about. And when we see a student like you doing exactly that, taking advantage of all those opportunities and really finding an excellent experience, and on top of it all, graduating with an excellent job at GE, that's really a great success, and I really appreciate you joining us for Liberal Arts Voices today.
Thank you very much.
This has been Liberal Arts Voices.